Good afternoon once again. I appreciated Mr. Jen's sermonette on what makes a hero a hero. This month our focus studies will be on heroes of the Bible, and we'll be looking through the lives of some of the characters that we've heard stories about for years and maybe forgotten about, and maybe some of our young ones haven't heard the stories. So that will be the focus of our sermonettes and sermons for this month. Heroes come in all shapes and sizes and from all walks of life. These individuals that we learn about aren't going to be like our manufactured heroes, ones who get their superpowers from another planet or getting bit by a radioactive spider. In fact, some of them, most of them, all of them, don't have any kind of superhero powers. They don't have powers that we don't have. They're everyday people like you and me. So what is it about them? What sets them apart from others? What is it about these people that we look back on when we consider them to be heroes? Let's turn over to the book of Hebrews, chapter 11. And we're going to get a look at what it is that made these people special. Why is it that we refer to them as heroes? What have they done? What were they able to do? And in fact, we'll go through some of the actions of some of them and we'll see. We could do that. There wasn't anything superhuman about that. My Bible has a title for this chapter. It's called Heroes of Faith. And that's the little hint of what it is that made these people so special. And as we read through this, we're going to read a phrase over and over again. And that phrase is, by faith. We're going to see that faith is what it is that made these people be the heroes that they are to us. Starting in verse 1 of Hebrews 11. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. That is the driving force behind these heroes. Verse 2, for by it the elders obtained a good testimony. By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. By faith Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and through it he, being dead, still speaks. By faith, Enoch was taken away so that he was not seen again and was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had his testimony that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Verse 7, by faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Where he lived was not as important to him as where he was going to live. Verse 11, by faith Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. Verse 13 tells us these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off. They were assured of them, they embraced them, and they confessed them, that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, "In Isaac your seed shall be called," concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. Verse 20, by faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of his sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. Verse 22, by faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's command. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. For he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, whereas the Egyptians, attempting to do so, were drowned. By faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days. By faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she received the spies with peace. And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Japheth, also of David and Samson, Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weaknesses were made strong, became valiant in battle, and turned the flight of the armies of the aliens. What made these people heroes? Where did they gain the strength that they needed to do what they did? Most of them were just like you and me. They had families. They had jobs. They had responsibilities. They had things to take care of. They lived in hard times and faced persecution. But they became heroes when they decided to live according to faith. When they decided that God's way was the right way to go, no matter what society around them said. Have you ever considered yourself to be a hero of faith? We read these stories of these people and what they did and what they went through. I bet some of them would be pretty impressed to hear your stories, because you've made some of the same decisions. You, by faith, have stepped out and done things that maybe didn't seem like the easiest way at the time. But you were obeying God. You might not think of yourself as that hero, but I think God does look at us that way. When we follow him, when we do the things that we know to be right, when we step out on faith. See, many of the people we refer to as the heroes were very unlikely people to fulfill that role. We may think of ourselves sometimes as unlikely to fill that role, but many of these people were as well. Let's turn over to 1 Samuel 16. 1 Samuel 16. We see David being picked as king. First Samuel chapter 16, starting in verse 1. Now the Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I am sending you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided myself a king among his sons. God said to Samuel, it's time to move on. You're mourning someone that I am rejecting. It's time to pick a new king. Verse 6, so it was when they came that he looked at... I'm sorry, let's go back to verse 4. So Samuel did what the Lord said, and he did this out of fear. You'll read there a couple of verses before. He says, what if Saul finds out what I'm doing? God says, I'll take care of you. Just do what's right. So he went, verse 4. Samuel did what the Lord said, went to Bethlehem. And the elders of the town trembled at his coming and said, do you come peaceably? And he said, peaceably I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice. Then he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. So it was when they came that he looked at Eliab and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. He looked at this young man who was probably very strong and very secure and sure of himself, and he said, surely this is the next king. Verse 7, but the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees, but looks at the for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. So Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. And he said, neither has the Lord chosen this one. And they go on. And Jesse made Shamron pass by, and the Lord did not pick him. Finally, we come down to verse 11, and Samuel says to Jesse, are all the young men here? Because at this point, God has rejected everyone that has come before him. Then he said, there remains yet the youngest, and he is keeping the sheep. And Samuel said to Jesse, send and bring him, for we will not sit down till he comes here. So he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy with bright eyes and good looking. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for he is the one. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel arose and went to Ramah. David's own father didn't see the potential in him. He didn't bring him in when he was looking for going through his sons to see who was going to be the next king. He left him out in the field. It wasn't no need to bother him. He's just a young one. David, who was overlooked by his own father, ended up being probably the best king that Israel has ever had. Now, he sets a good example for us because David had some shortcomings, didn't he? David did a lot of things wrong. David did a lot of things right, but David did a lot of things wrong. And unfortunately for him, because we're all going to meet him someday, it's all written down for us to read. But it is encouraging for us because sometimes we can think, how could God use me? What am I that God could use me for anything? And then we can look to these ones that we refer to as these heroes from the Old Testament and think, well, I haven't done that. Not that we should be comparing ourselves to others and seeing if we're better than them in particular things. But if God can use someone like David, is there someone in this room that God could not use? Some of the ones that we consider to be heroes didn't want the job. They wanted no part of that. They're like, whoa, what are you talking about? That's not for me. Moses is an interesting example because at first, Moses thought that was his role. Moses was all fired up. He was ready to lead the Israelites out. But it wasn't time. And when it came time, Moses is like, no. Let's don't do it that way. Let's turn over to Acts chapter 7. Acts chapter 7, starting in verse 21, we'll see a little summary of events here. We'll be reading verses 21 through 29. Acts 7, starting in verse 21. But when he was set out, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and brought him up as her own son. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and it was mighty in words and deeds. Now when he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended and avenged him who was oppressed, and struck down the Egyptian, for he supposed that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand. But they did not understand. Moses figured, they're going to know I'm going to lead them out. They're going to know I'm on their side. That's not the way they saw it. Verse 25. For he supposed that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand, but they did not understand. Verse 26. And the next day he appeared to two of them as they were fighting and tried to reconcile them, saying, "Men, you are brethren. Why do you wrong one another?" He's like, "Why are you guys fighting each other? You're brethren. We're in this fight together. Don't fight each other. We have another battle to fight." Verse 27, but he who did his neighbor wrong pushed him away, saying, "Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you did the Egyptian yesterday?" Then at this saying, Moses fled and became a dweller in the land of Midian, where he had two sons. See, Moses supposed that it was his job to deliver the Israelites. But when the Israelites did not have the same understanding, Moses became afraid and he fled. If we go over to the story and pick it up in the book of Exodus, we'll see that Moses is out tending his sheep. He's got his new life now. This is what he's doing, and he seems to be content with his life. But as he looks around, he sees this bush that is on fire, but the fire is not consuming it. So he goes up to see what the deal is with it. And as he goes up to it, God starts speaking to him from this bush and explains to him now what his plan is. Let's turn over to Exodus chapter 3 and verse 10. God explains to Moses that he's heard the cry of the Israelites and he's ready to free them now. And Moses is going to have a pivotal role in their release. Exodus 3, starting in verse 10. "Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?" Who am I? I'm just someone who was raised in the house of Pharaoh, who probably the only one that would have access to Pharaoh to go in and talk to him. Who am I, God? I'm just out here tending sheep. Moses was no longer interested in being the one to help them out. Exodus 4 and verse 13. As God goes through the plan and explains to Moses, "No, you're the one. I'm going to use you." And Moses keeps saying, "I don't know." Exodus 4 and verse 13, Moses says, "Oh my Lord, please send the hand of whomever else you may send." Like, pick anyone, God. There's a whole planet of people. Pick anyone but me. And God answers him and says, "Okay, fine. I'll send somebody else. I'll send your brother. But you're still going to go. You're still a part of this plan." So Moses went. Moses had faith. Moses had faith that God could and would do everything he said he was going to do. Moses had faith that God could use him to free the Israelites. Now, there was nothing physically amazing about Moses. Let's think of all the acts that Moses did. I wrote them down so I didn't forget too many of them. Here's what Moses did. He laid down his staff. He picked up his staff. He put his hand in his robe. He pulled his hand back out of his robe. He put his hand back in his robe, pulled his hand back out of his robe again. He went before Pharaoh and he gave warnings over and over. He stretched out his hand over the Red Sea. And then he stretched out his hand over the Red Sea again. What did Moses do? Moses had faith. He had faith in God's word. That when he did all these things, God was going to do something. Moses knew there wasn't anything he could do about it. You can go hold your hand over the Red Sea all you want, and it's not going to divide. Unless God tells you to hold your hand over the Red Sea and says he's going to divide it. That's the faith that Moses had. He knew he wasn't going in there with some great backing of an army or any special powers. God simply showed him a few things he had that he was going to do before the Pharaoh to show him the power of God. Moses did it because he had that faith. Others had faith enough to break laws and put their lives in danger. Their very lives, the things we treasure the most. We know where to obey the laws of man, so long as they don't cause us to disobey the laws of God. People have been put in that situation. Remember, those who hid Anne Frank and her family were breaking the law. Those who came and took her family away and put them in a concentration camp and killed them were obeying the law. We do obey man's laws, but to a point that they don't make us compromise God's laws. Let's turn back to the book of Esther. I love the story of Esther. There is so much that happens in there, so many twists and turns. As we pick up the story here, her uncle Mordecai has learned of a plot against the Jews, and he asks his niece Esther, who he has raised as a daughter, to help. He goes to her and asks for help because she's in a position to be able to help. Because through a series of unlikely events, Esther has become queen. Let's pick up the story in the book of Esther in chapter 4, starting in verse 14. Mordecai has come and he has asked for Esther's help, and she's wavering back and forth. She says, "I don't know. You know, if I do this stuff, there's things that could happen. I could lose my life. You're asking me to do something very dangerous." Starting in verse 14, Mordecai answers, he says, "For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place." He said, you know, God's going to save his people, whether you help or not. He knew, he had faith that God would save his people. He says, "But you and your father's house will perish." Mordecai figured that at least he would perish, and probably it would be discovered that Esther was related to him, and that she would perish as well. And then he says, "Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Who knows if your whole life at this point was brought here for this reason, to save your people? Verse 15, "Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, 'Go, gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise, and I will go to the king, which is against the law. And if I perish, I perish.'" Esther's resolve was that she would do what was right, even if it cost her her life. Because one of the things that these heroes of faith recognize is that this life is not as valuable as the next life. This is training ground for what's next. And she knew that if she lost her life at some point, she would receive the promise as well. She was going to do what was right, even if it cost her her life. Esther's decision was not unlike that of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. You might ask, who's that? We know them a little bit better as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Let's turn over to Daniel 1, verses 6 and 7. As we look here in the book of Daniel, chapter 1, we're at a time when Jerusalem has been besieged by Nebuchadnezzar, and the inhabitants are under his rule. Among those are Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. They have their names changed. This shows they're basically slaves. They're not under their own rule. They're not free to do what it is they want to do. Look at this here in Daniel 1, starting in verse 6 and 7. Now from among those, the sons of Judah and Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, to them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. The Jewish culture was being wiped out. Even the inhabitants' names were changed to Babylonian names. Again, this shows they were slaves. They had no freedom to do what it is that they wanted to do. Let's turn over to Daniel 3, starting in verse 1. We see here Nebuchadnezzar makes a law concerning all the inhabitants. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and the width was 6 cubits. And he set it in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps, the administrators, governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So he sends out for everyone who is in a position of rulership and brings them here to the dedication of this statue that he has set up. Verse 4, then a herald cried aloud, to you it is commanded, O people, O nations, and languages. That means everybody, not just those who believe the way the Babylonians believe, not just those to whom this was a god, but to everyone who was under the rulership of King Nebuchadnezzar. Verse 5, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whosoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. So at the time when the people heard the sound of the horn and all these other instruments, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So the people obeyed. The people did what King said. Nobody wanted to be thrown in the middle of a fiery furnace. So they did what was commanded of them. We see some of the other leaders come before the king. Verse 10, he says, you, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of all these instruments shall fall down and worship the image. Verse 11, and whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. So they reminded him, you know, you said this stuff. You're going to look bad if you don't do this. You said you're going to throw these people in the middle of a fiery furnace. Then they said, verse 12, there are certain Jews who you have set among the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods, nor worship the gold image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring them before him. In rage and fury, how dare they, people he has put in a position to be leaders, not obey his direct commands? Do they not understand who he is, what he can do to them? He was in a fury and a rage. Verse 14, they come before him, and he says, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods nor worship the gold image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready, verse 15, At the time you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, and psaltery and symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and you worship the image I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God that will deliver you from my hands? He gave him another chance. He's like, you know, maybe there's a misunderstanding. So we're going to do this again. And if you do it, then good. You'll be fine. You'll be able to go back. But if not, you will meet the fate that I have laid out, which is being thrown in the midst of the fiery furnace. Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. We don't even have to tell you our answer. We understand what the punishment is. We understand what it is you're asking us to do. Verse 17, if that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. We're going to be taken out from your rulership, if not saved from the fiery furnace. But let it be known to you, O king, we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the golden image which you have set up. These faithful men knew that God could save them. They had no doubt that God could deliver them from this fiery furnace. But they were also aware that God may have not chosen to do so. Yet that did not influence their attitude and their resolve not to worship this image. Faith may not translate into a victory in every circumstance, at least not the way we want it to. Let's go back to Hebrews 11. We'll be picking up with verse 35. Hebrews 11, starting in verse 35. Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might attain a better resurrection. Still others, this is talking about many people throughout history, not just the ones that we know of as our biblical heroes, but many of them throughout history. Still others had a trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and tormented. These people, this description of these people, these are not the ones people would have looked at as heroes. They're basically homeless people, sojourning, destitute, afflicted, tormented. Yet what does God inspire the author of the book of Hebrews to say about these people? Verse 38, of whom the world was not worthy. The world was not worthy of these people. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and dens and caves of the earth. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego knew the result of what it is they were standing up for may have resulted in their death. But to these men, the outcome was irrelevant. They weren't trying to preserve their lives. They knew what was at stake was not God's ability to save them, or even their own lives, but their faith and obedience to serve him regardless of the cost. It was the same attitude Esther had when she said, if I perish, then I perish. She knew there was a time to do the right thing. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 3, starting in verse 19. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had just answered him and said, we are not going to serve you nor the gods that you have set up. Verse 19, Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury and the expression on his face changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. His whole expression changed. I'm sure he probably felt pretty good about himself giving them this one last chance to just go ahead and, you know, do what I've told you to do and we'll be okay. And they answered and said, we're not going to do it. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. His fury is so, it's just over the top now. He wants to hurt him and he wants to hurt him bad again and again and again. Seven times what the furnace was normally set to. He wanted to make sure the job was going to be done. Verse 20, and he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. These men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. I read something that said usually when punishment like this was carried out, the people were stripped of all their clothing before punishment like this took place. So when they says they were in their coats and their trousers and their turbans and their other garments, it means it was instantly. It was like right now, just do it. Just get it done. Verse 22, therefore, because of the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It was so hot that those who were carrying out the orders of the king died by doing that because they got too close to the furnace. It was just incredibly hot. Verse 23, and these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down, bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said to the king, true, O king. Look, he answered, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire. And the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together, and they saw these men on whose bodies the fire had no power. The hair on their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. It is as if they were never even in there. It was as if they were never even close to the furnace. Not even the smell of smoke was on them. Verse 28, Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him. And they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or language which speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their house shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this. What a powerful example Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego set. It's the same example that we are told to set. You don't have to turn there, but you might want to write this one down. Matthew 5, verse 16. Jesus Christ speaking to us, Matthew 5, verse 16 says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. That's what faith can do. Heroic acts come in all sizes, depending on the situation. We are called to be a hero, to stand up for what is right, even when what is right is deemed wrong by those around us. We may not have the opportunity to lead millions out of bondage, But then again, we may. We may or may not have the opportunity to save many people from catastrophic events. That may or may not be our calling. Our job as a hero of faith may affect many, or it may affect one. The job is still the same. We are made for heroic acts of generosity and love. Embrace what a hero is. Embrace what a hero does. Because we may have to fulfill that role with conviction and excitement. Because we are all headed for the same reward. Remember, we talked about the reward a few times as we were reading through the book of Hebrews, chapter 11. Let's go back there one more time. Hebrews 11. We'll be reading verses 39 through 40. Hebrews 11, verse 39, "And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise." All these people we read about in the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, did not receive the promise. Verse 40, "God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us." These great heroes of faith will receive the promise at the same time you and I do. We will receive them for our heroic acts. You have that calling. You have that same God with you that was with them. You have faith. You are that hero.